Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on Noah M Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. Yes, I'm still a little bit froggy, but there's no extra charge to hear me talk like this with all this resonance, so just kick back and enjoy tonight. I hope you're going to stick with us for most of the program. The U.S. House, I saw this right before airtime, the U.S. House has passed a bill that would require the military services to guarantee our troops as much time at home as they spend deployed. You're in a battle zone for a year, you'll be home for a year. It passed the House by a vote of 229 to 194. You've got to wonder about the 194, the 194 members of the U.S. House, I'm sure they were all Republicans, who said no. We want our troops to continue. We want our military readiness to continue to be degraded by Republican policy. We don't want the troops to have time at home after they've been deployed in different places around the world. How do those 194 people, all Republicans, I'm certain, I haven't looked at the party affiliation of how the vote went down, but you can bet your ass they're all Republicans. I just wonder how they square that with the fact that they didn't serve. They are cowards. They are anti-military. They get us into these problems because they suck up to the Bush crime family. And yet when service members want just some sort of respite, you know, to go home to be with their families, these Republicans vote no. To make it even worse, Bush has threatened to veto the bill. He's going to veto the bill. Now, specifically, this law would impose specific deployment lengths and time at home between deployments. That's all. Active duty members would have to spend at least as much time at their home station as deployed before they could be deployed again to a war zone. That's all. And National Guard and Reserve members, you know, the people that join up because they want to do something here at home, they would be promised that they would not be deployed until they had been home at least three times the length of time of their previous deployment. You're in Iraq for 11 months. That means you get to be home for 33. Ike Skelton, a Democrat of Missouri, who I don't know if he was one of the sponsors. Ellen Tosher, a Democrat of California, was the sponsor. But Ike Skelton, Democrat of Missouri, who is the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, said, quote, "Our troops and their families are tired. They are being stressed by the continued and extended deployments. It's time for Congress to take a stand on behalf of the families and say in a clear, unequivocal voice that it's time that service members have a minimum dwell time between deployments," end quote. Now, the statement from the Bush crime family's monster hole that says the bill would, they're going to veto it, the statement said the bill would, quote, "infringe on the president's constitutional authority as commander-in-chief to manage the readiness and availability of the armed forces," end quote, and would, quote, "substitute the mandates of Congress for the considered judgment of our military commanders," end quote. And then the White House statement says, "if this legislation were presented to the president, he will veto the bill," end quote. See what I mean? Every single day, these rat bastards do something else to show their lack of patriotism, their disrespect for the military, their hatred for the American people, their greed and selfishness and cowardice every single day. So this was today's example. Last spring, in an editorial, the Minneapolis Star Tribune said the bridges in Minnesota were unsafe due to chronic underfunding of transportation during the previous decade. So the legislature in Minnesota passed a 5 cent a gallon tax increase that was going to be used to increase funding for transportation, including infrastructure. The Republican governor, Paul Lenti, who ran on the slogan, "No new taxes," vetoed the bill. Some of the blood of the dead people and the wounded people and the shocked and hurt people from that bridge collapse is splattered all over this governor, this Republican governor of Minnesota. How much longer will it be until the American people realize that conservative slash Republican policies absolutely are against the best interests of the people of this country. How long will it be? What does it take until folks understand that Republican/conservative policies are detrimental to our health, our safety, our welfare, our security, our jobs, everything, education, all of it. How long will it be? So when they start looking for the cause and the effect, look at Governor Pawlenty, who vetoed a nickel a gallon bill. A nickel a gallon on gasoline bill to improve infrastructure, including bridges. And let's see what happens when George Bush, if he follows through on his threat to veto the children's health insurance program reauthorization and uptick that just passed through the House. Let's see what happens. These unconscionable bastards, how much have we spent in Iraq? $600 billion that we know about. It's probably closer to $1,000 billion. That's a trillion. And what have I been reading all day? What would it take to totally improve, correct, maintain, refurbish the infrastructure in this country? About $160 billion. And what do the Republicans say? Oh, well, we can't afford it. But we can spend five times that, four times that, to murder people. And you folks wonder why occasionally I say, son of a bitch, huh? Our food chain that requires safety monitoring, nothing. Infrastructure, bridges, dams, rail beds, nothing. Yet we spend billions a month in the Middle East. We give it to Israel. We give it to Egypt. We give it to the Saudi royal family. We give it to the corrupt contractors and killers who now run Iraq. We give it to the royal family in Kuwait. Billions and billions and billions of dollars to these Middle Eastern countries. And then when a bridge collapses because of no maintenance, everybody says, well, you know, we got to find out what happened. George Bush comes out in the Rose Garden and says, we're going to pray for you. All America will pray. So you people that lost your mom or your dad, you know, it's just like you people lose your mom or your dad fighting for freedom over there in Iraq. We're going to pray for you. That'll make it all better. We're praying for you. I hate them. Infrastructure report card that's 2 years old. Bridges. Between 2000 and 2003, the percentage of the nation's 500,000 bridges rated structurally deficient or functionally obsolete stood at 27%. It'll cost $9.5 billion a year for 20 years to eliminate all bridge deficiencies. Long-term underinvestment is compounded by the lack of a federal transportation program. Leadership, huh? Dams. Since 1998, the number of unsafe dams has risen by a third to more than 3,500. $10.1 billion is needed over the next 12 years. What is that, $1 billion a year? To address all critical dams. Dams which pose a direct risk to human life should they fail. $1 billion a month, a year, over the next 10 years for dams. And how much is that in terms of Bush's fun little murderous adventure in Iraq? Huh? How much is that? Is that a month's a killing, bombing, murder, chaos? 1 month. I've got some more for you here. So stick around. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
In the paper. Your host for a Appiance Freeance Future, it's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. So in terms of bridges and dams, billions of dollars needed. And this has got to be on a federal level. States can no longer afford to do this, and it should be on the federal level. The federal level, blah, 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 means it comes from the states anyway, because it comes from the municipalities, which means it comes from you and me. Where in the hell else does money come from? It's not federal tax dollars. It flows up. It doesn't flow down. But, of course, the Republicans have convinced everybody in this country that it's not our money. It's the federal government's money, and they've got to balance a budget. But they also have to spend 6/10 of $1 trillion so far that we know about on their filthy little war over in Iraq, killing American soldiers and Iraqi civilians in order to glom up the oil. So what does it take? $9.5 billion a year for 20 years to take care of the bridges in this country. $1 billion a year for the next 12 years to take care of the dams. Drinking water? According to the report, infrastructure report card in 2005, America faces a shortfall of $11 billion annually to replace aging facilities and comply with safe drinking water regulations. Federal funding for drinking water in 2005? $850 million. Less than 10% of the total national requirement. Huh? You like that? Now, when it comes to building roads, there was one decent Republican, Eisenhower, remember him? 90% of the money required to build the interstate highway system came from federal highway funds, which I believe, if I'm not mistaken, were funded by gasoline taxes. Don't send me an email because I really don't care. The point is, we can do this, but not under this corrupt, filthy Bush-Cheney administration. Energy, the national power grid. Urgent need of modernization, it says here. Growth in electricity demand and investment in new power plants has not been matched by investment in new transmission facilities. We're not talking about power plants here. We're talking about the transmission facilities. What else? Hazardous waste. Federal funding for Superfund cleanup of the nation's worst toxic waste sites has steadily declined since 1998, it is estimated that redevelopment of those sites would generate 500,000 new jobs and $2 billion annually for the economy. Waterways. Only 257 locks on the more than 12,000 miles of inland waterways operated by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Of that number, 50% are functionally obsolete. Public parks and recreation. It says in this report, public parks, beaches, and recreational harbors are falling into a state of disrepair. The National Park Service estimates a maintenance backlog of $6.1 billion for their facilities. Railroads. The freight railroad industry needs to spend $175 to $195 billion over the next 20 years to maintain existing infrastructure and expand for freight growth. Roads. Poor road conditions cost U.S. motorists $54 billion a year in repairs and operating costs. That works out to almost $300 per motorist. And we spend 3.5 billion hours a year stuck in traffic. Schools. $127 billion needed to bring facilities to good condition. It just goes on and on. Solid waste. The nation's operating municipal landfills are declining in total numbers. We're producing 369 million tons of solid waste a year. Where's it going to go? Transit. Major transit properties are borrowing money to maintain operations, even as they are significantly raising fares and cutting back on service. Wastewater. They need $390 billion over the next 20 years to replace existing systems and build new ones to meet increasing demands. Yet, in 2005, Congress cut funding for wastewater management for the first time in 8 years. And it just goes on and on. This is what the Republicans are doing to this country. So here are the grades. In bridges, D. Dams D, drinking water D-, national power grid D, hazardous waste D, navigable waterways D-, public parks and recreation D, rail C-, roads D, schools D, security, they don't even know, give it an I, incomplete, solid waste C, transit D, wastewater D-. Total investment needed over the next 20 years, $1.6 trillion. How much have we spent on Iraq and Afghanistan? A third of that already. So where's the priorities of the Republican Party? They are the most anti-American, anti-family, pro-death gang I have ever seen. Don't you agree?
Doing talk radio right. From the left, it's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. See, wouldn't that make a nice State of the Union address every year? Instead of the hog snot that Bush and I guess Democratic presidents do it also. A real report on the State of the Union, not the state of foreign policy, not a state of rhetorical garbage and crap and threats and promises that mean nothing and empty rhetoric. Not that. Not pointing up in the visitor's gallery at somebody who, for some reason, serves a political purpose of the person giving the speech from the podium. No, not that. But a real State of the Union message to the American people. Here's where we stand, folks, on aviation. Here's where we stand on bridges and dams and drinking water. Here's where our national power grid is. Here's where we stand on hazardous waste cleanup and our waterways and public parks and recreation. Here's how we stand on roads and schools and security. These sons of bitches would no more do that than they would stand up there and set themselves on fire. But isn't that what a State of the Union address should be about? Yes, Mike, it is. Unbelievable. Sheila sends me this. The Iraq war costs $12 billion a month. That's what we're spending. That's what we're spending because we are gullible, we are ignorant, we are stupid, and we are cowards. That's what we're spending. That's just in the money. $12 billion a month. That's just the visible money. Let's add to that all of this money that goes to the military-industrial complex. That's got to be another $12 billion a month. This is what America's become. And why? 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 Now, regarding the bill passed by the House, regarding deployment and time off of our military, when we get a psychopath, a jerk, coward, jackass like Bush and Cheney in control, how much time our soldiers and Marines and airmen and sailors have off from going over and dying in these rat bastards' toy wars. The vote was 229 to 194 to give people equal amount of time off from a war zone, equal to the amount of time they put in. That's regular Army, regular Marine Corps. If you are Reserve or National Guard, you're entitled to three times the amount of time you spent killing or trying to avoid being killed in Bush or Cheney's psychopathic wet dreams. Three times as much time at home so you can be with your family. Now, I said I didn't think a single Republican voted for it. Six Republicans broke ranks. Barb at Democratic Underground sends in to me. Six Republicans broke ranks to support this bill, and three more Republicans voted present. You cowardly sons of bitches. That is, they voted present. So nine Republicans out of 200. You families, you people listening out there who have a family member in the military, I mean, doesn't that turn your stomach? And you still think the Republican Party has the best interests of your husband or your daughter or son or mom who happens to be in uniform in a war zone? You really think the Republicans? Oh, my God, for Christ's sake, wake up! If you are pro-military, fine. But don't be pro-Republican, because they hate you. They hate you. They look at you as jerks and geeks and freaks and disposable resources. That's all they see you as. My God. And talking about military families, can you think for a moment about the unique pain of the kids whose mostly dads, some of them moms, are in the United States military right now, serving in these war zones created because of the greed and cowardice of Bush and Cheney and the Project for New American Century, these neocon bastards? How often? They're becoming fewer and fewer now because I guess viewers write in to the television stations or networks and say, I can't take anymore. But those little 2 and 3 minute video packages of kids who just want their daddies to come home, for Christ's sake. Just come home. This is not World War II. This is not fathers and sons going out to defend freedom in the American way. You know that. I know that. The kids don't know it. What the kids know is that they, or maybe one other kid in their classroom, and school's about to begin again. Maybe they and maybe one or two other kids in their classroom have a parent in a war zone. The rest of the country doesn't give a damn, doesn't care. And these little kids, 7, 8, 9-year-olds, all they want is their dad to come home alive with his arms. They want their moms to come home not suffering from PTSD. That's all they want. And this son of a bitch in the White House says, no, you're not going to have it. And you're not going to have health insurance. And when your daddy does come home, he'll go back when I, by God, tell him he's going back. Because I'm the decider. And I look at these kids, these little kids. Jesus, God. And these are not stupid kids. What are their fathers fighting for? What? Why is your daddy fighting, Junior?
So the Sunnis don't, I don't know. I just want him to come home.
I don't think there's ever been an evil walking the halls of governance in this country like the Bush crime family. I really don't. It's just, and then this big report yesterday in the LA Times, the stress of having an Army spouse in a combat zone leads to a 60% increase in the rate of moderate to severe maltreatment of children by the spouse left behind. Huh? The maltreatment could have long-term consequences, it says, because abused children are more likely to suffer from depression and other health problems well into adulthood. Parental stress is one of the most common causes of such maltreatment, which includes neglect and physical emotional abuse. Deployment of a spouse to a combat zone is likely to increase stress substantially. It's just, the Republicans, do you folks not get it? I know most Democrats get it, but you Republicans who lurk around this program, don't you understand that the Republican Party hates your guts, hates everything you represent? They have no respect for you whatsoever. You are a disposable resource to them. My God. The most common form of mistreatment of children whose families have a family member in a combat zone is neglect, which the researchers defined as failure to provide adequate care, supervision, and in some cases, abandonment. Oh, man. Do you hear Republicans talking about this? No. But let them find a fetus someplace. Let them find a frozen embryo, and they say, oh, these are snowflakes, and they have to be saved. But children, children who just want a chance, they want their moms and dads to be home and not in a war zone, those kids can pound sand in their ears for all the Republicans care. They don't care. They don't care. They just want those little kids to grow up quickly so they can be shuffled into a uniform and given a weapon and say, go kill for George. Go kill for oil. Go kill for capitalism. Go kill for your country. Go kill. I get so sick of this. I just wonder, like I do all the time, what is it going to take before America realizes that the Republican Party is destroying us, that Republican politicians are anti-family, they're anti-American, that anyone who chants Republican garbage in the public square like this freakoid Hannity or Limbaugh, these people hate you, they hate us, they hate the country, they are cowards, they are destroyers. They are just evil down to the core. And when are we going to understand that and destroy for once and forever the Republican Party as some sort of machine capable of using power in this society? When are we going to do that? My God.
See, Mr. President, I have a wife in Wisconsin. Though I write every day, I've been so long away, I've forgotten. When I close my eyes, I can't see her. It's only this war in my head. And I try to bury my fear, but I always carry the dead.
But what if the enemy isn't in a distant land? What if the enemy lies behind the voice of command? The sound of war is a child's cry. Behind tinted windows they just drive by. And all I know is that those that are going to be killed aren't those that preside on Capitol Hill. I told him, don't fill the front lines of their war. Those aren't worth dying for. And he said, roll with.
It's about 9 before the hour. And a bit more bad news for people who don't need any more in this country, which, when you think about it, is pretty much all of us except the hedge fund operators. According to the Associated Press, Hurricane Katrina victims whose homes and businesses were destroyed when floodwaters breached levees in the storm will be denied the right to recover money from their insurance companies for damages. That's a federal appeals court ruled that today. And according to the AP, the case could affect tens of thousands of rebuilding residents and business owners in Louisiana. And if it applies in Louisiana, also applies in Mississippi. Sorry, Sarge. An attorney who represented 21 plaintiffs in the case, people asking for relief from their insurance companies, broke the news to his clients. Now, insurers could have taken a multi-million dollar hit if the ruling had gone against the industry, said an insurance attorney and analyst. A multi-billion dollar hit? What are you rat bastards in business? Oh, never mind. For a moment there, maybe it's the pneumonia. I always think that insurance companies are there to make sure your health is taken care of and your bills are paid. And if it's your house insurance, to make sure your house is rebuilt if it burns down. And if it's flood insurance or hurricane damage or some sort of damage, to make sure you have a chance, because what the hell? You've been paying the premiums, haven't you? This is not for people who are uninsured. This is for people who are insured. No! Go screw yourselves. We got the money. We're the insurance industry. We're like the pharmaceutical industry. We're like the defense industry. Screw you. We got the money. What the hell do you want? Get out of here. Go get a job. Get out of my face. The judge who wrote for this three-judge panel of the 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, said, quote, "This event, Hurricane Katrina, was excluded from coverage under the plaintiff's insurance policies, and we are bound to enforce the unambiguous terms of their insurance contracts as written. As a result, we find that those who filed suit are not entitled to recover under their policies." Sounds like just cut and dried, right? Huh? More than a dozen insurance companies, including Allstate and Travelers, were defendants. The lawyer representing 21 plaintiffs in the case says he's going to appeal. Now, the decision by the appeals court overturns a ruling by U.S. District Judge Stanwood Duvall Jr., who back in November said, yeah, policy holders who argued that language excluding water damage was ambiguous. That's been overturned. The judge then said the policies did not distinguish between floods caused by an act of God, so-called, such as excessive rainfall, and floods caused by an act of man, which would include the levee breaches following Katrina's landfall. But the appeals panel, the ones that told the plaintiffs to go to hell, said even if the plaintiffs can prove that the levees were negligently designed, constructed, or maintained, and that the breaches were due to this negligence, the flood exclusions in their policies unambiguously preclude their recovery. So, what would it have taken? You see, and this brings us back to the bridge collapse. What would it have taken to make sure that the levees would have held around New Orleans? What would it have taken? Well, according to everything I've been reading for the past 2 years, it would have taken competency on the part of the U.S. Corps of Engineers. It would have taken honesty in their reports. It would have taken a State of the Union message from a president sometime, somewhere, who said, oh, by the way, we've known for 2 decades that the levees, if New Orleans ever takes a direct hit, will not hold. Let's fix it. Jesus, God. A spokesman for Allstate said that company is pleased with the court's rulings today.
We're very pleased. Thank you, court. Ooh, boy, we almost had to pay. Son of a bitch. Man, that was close.
And now what are they doing in the Mississippi Gulf Coast area? They just stopped insuring. Well, that should be a lesson for the people whose homes were there, right? Why are you living in an area like that? Huh? That's like them dumb bastards that live out on the West Coast in California, live right on that San Andreas fault line. When that thing problem finally goes, they're going to want the rest to pay for it, right? Hell no. Y'all be like me. Live over here in, where do I live? Wherever it is. Of course, what that doesn't take into account where it concerns the Mississippi Gulf Coast area is how many folks live there, live in rental property, are sharecroppers. Yeah, they still have sharecroppers here in the South, folks. Are dirt poor, work in the casinos, and can't afford to move. Well, that's another group of people you just want to say, screw them, right? The U.S. military, screw them. Poor people, screw them. People who have to take bridges to get to and from work, screw them. 5 cent a gallon gasoline tax in Minnesota, and you can make the argument that the bridge wouldn't have collapsed. Oh, you're crazy, Malloy. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. So I'm listening to our network news, AP Radio Network News. George Bush is going to make a trip to the disaster area in Minnesota this weekend. Why? For what reason? To tell the grieving families and the scared people that he and Laura are praying? You know, this is a guy who vetoes everything. He doesn't give a damn. He doesn't care about the people of Minnesota. He doesn't care about... It's you know, Robe said, okay, you got to go out there and make great photo op, just like when you were in Jackson Square down in New Orleans with the church behind you and the wonderful stark lighting, and everything was dark and misty, George, and we had lights on you. Remember when you made your promise that no matter what, things are going to be taken care of? Huh? Remember that? Well, you can do the same thing in Minnesota. Isn't this fun? The cynicism of these people is beyond belief at every single time. It's just like Lucy and Charlie Brown. You know, every single time Lucy Bush says he'll hold the football. Come on, kick it. And the American public, I don't care if it's people in New Orleans or people in Mississippi or people in Minneapolis. I don't care where it is. And they just come running over, boom, right on their asses once again. And I have another question. Why do we always react to situations like this? I'm hearing on the news that, okay, we've had 6 people dead and 8 still missing, and hot damn, I'll tell you what we're going to do now. we're going to examine stuff and look at stuff and check for rust and corrosion. Boy, we're going to just crack ass now here in the great state of Minnesota, and maybe over here in Iowa too. I don't know. It may spread. Maybe we'll do it in Wisconsin. But we're going to look at nuts and bolts and wires and springs, and if we always wait till people die, don't we? We always wait until there's been a tragedy, don't we, huh? I guess it makes for better PR that way. Cameras are rolling. Did you see any network news tonight? Charles Gibson, for God's sake, at ABC News, opens the program in a helicopter? Oh, Charlie. Oh, be still my beating heart. Charlie, that was just awesome. Oh, my God. You're just such a... No wonder you're number one. You're so macho. There he was. With his head twisted back, looking in the camera, high above this destroyed bridge. There he is, Charlie Gibson, ABC News. Ah, did you like that? Jesus. And then the other two? Where were the other two? I don't know where Katie Couric was, probably in the bathroom. But the other guy, who's the guy on NBC? Brian Williams. There he is. Shirt sleeves rolled up, no tie, no jacket. There he is, standing off to the side. Always, huh? It makes for great, great, great network news backdrops, right? A helicopter. I bet you Brian Williams was just absolutely mega pissed when he found out that Charlie Gibson was up above him in a helicopter. Huh? What do you think? I bet a remote producer for NBC got fired tonight as soon as they were off the air. Bring the rat bastard in here. Charlie Gibson was in a helicopter, and I'm standing down here on this bridge? Who did that? Fire him. Her. Whoever. Send him to Fox. We always react, don't we? We just react. Now, what's going to happen? What's going to happen in, I don't know, pick a city, pick a state. Do you suppose that tomorrow some state legislature someplace will start drafting legislation to appropriate funds to start inspecting the bridges and dams and rail beds and you think? Do you suppose that some congressional delegations in the U.S. House will start drafting legislation to divert maybe just 10% of this $12 billion a month that we use to blow people away in Iraq and refocus it back to the United States for infrastructure repair? You think? Nah, you know as well as I do. Hey, MSNBC and CNN, they gave it wall-to-wall coverage. Have now for 24 hours. It'll go on for another 6, 8, 10. That's it. Let's move on. By the way, what happened to Karl Rove and Harriet Myers today? Anything going on in Iraq? Huh?
Well, that's what I was going to say, is that there's no question one person who is very happy today, regardless of what the bubbleheads on the talking news channels were saying. But Tony Snow had a good day today. He gave a press briefing, and I think he was only asked a Rove question or a Gonzalez question, I think, one time.
Yeah, well, they you're right. They love this kind of stuff. And I get this email from, I get two emails here, one from Stephen and one from Simon in the UK. Stephen says, Chucklenut's visit to Minnesota this weekend is for a campaign fundraiser for Norm Coleman. He doesn't give a rat's ass about the victims, Mr. Malloy. Stephen. And from Simon, who listens from Milton Keynes, the United Kingdom, he writes, this is from electioncentral.tpmcafe.com blogspot. And it says, in Minnesota, Al Franken and Mike Cerisi suspend campaigns, but the Republican National Committee continues on. Franken and Cerisi, who are running against each other for the Democratic nomination for Senate, have both suspended their campaign activities in light of yesterday's tragic bridge collapse. This includes the cancellation of a scheduled appearance by Franken on the David Letterman show. On the other hand, the New York Times reports that the Republican National Committee is continuing with their meetings in Minneapolis, which have already begun yesterday and continue through Saturday, with appearances by Ann Romney, Rudy Giuliani's campaign manager, First Lady Laura Bush, Governor Tim Pawlenty, and others. And then Simon writes, not only are they callous, uncaring pigs, like any of us didn't know that, but they don't seem to care who knows it anymore. That's true. Broken bridges, dead bodies, cars smashed against twisted concrete, grieving families. That this is photo op material for George Bush and for Republicans, so they can stand there and talk about God and prayer and embracing the hurt. And, you know, our heart just breaks when tragedies like this happen. It really does. We're going to make sure that everything's fixed. This is setting aside the horrible tragedy for the families who lost loved ones in this. This is 1/1000th of what happened on the Mississippi Gulf Coast 2 years ago. And what happens today in commemoration of that event, federal appeals court says to the people who lost everything down there, screw you. The insurance companies win. You lose. Go away. Get out of my courtroom. But here we are 2 years later. No hurricanes yet.
Global warming my ass.
But we got a bridge collapse in Minneapolis. Okay, crank it up. Let's go. Get the cameras out there. What's the president's schedule for this weekend? Oh, he's going there anyway? Great. That's good stuff. All right, we're going to get some shots of the president looking pensive as he flies over the tragic scene. Can we get something not quite as pensive as that scene when he was flying over New Orleans? That was a little bit too pensive. Let's rough it up just so that muss his hair a little bit. Get the shirt sleeves. Jesus, don't let him appear in a coat. But let's get a pensive shot looking out of Air Force One or a helicopter, whatever. We got any helicopters that we do? Okay, good. Let's go. Let's move this. We got to go. News cycles are news cycles by this weekend. NBC, CBS, ABC, CNN, Fox, and MSNBC will be just have forgotten it all together. So let's go. Let's go. My God. All right, I'll tell you what, I'm just getting too pissed off here. So when we come back, let's do some phone calls. All right, phone number here is 800-989-1480. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Norma M.
Casters cry when they read about people who die. At least they could be decent enough to put just a tear in their eyes. But Mama said, it's just make believe. You can't believe everything you see. So baby, close your eyes to the lullaby.
It's about 22 past the hour. From God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater, Kurt Vonnegut, he rambled on, said such things as, you know, I think the main purpose of the Army, Navy, and the Marine Corps is to get poor Americans into clean, pressed, unpatched clothes so rich Americans can stand and look at them. Bob sent that in. Yeah, regarding the military that we started the program with tonight, the 194 Republicans said no to allowing soldiers and Marines who've been in a combat zone to have the same amount of time at home as they have in a combat zone. 194 Republicans said no. That's astonishing.
Can I tell my airport story? I heard from a friend who was recently traveling to Atlanta, Hartsfield, through Atlanta, Hartsfield International, which alternately with Chicago O'Hare is the busiest airport in the world, and a lot of troops ship in and out of here. And apparently he saw this once but not twice because he does a lot of business traveling, a parade of soldiers where the commander, these were troops, I believe, being deployed, saying goodbye to their family members, and their commanding officer, whoever was there with them, to get them on the plane, I guess make sure they all got on the plane, toured them around the terminal so that the passengers, the other flyers, people in the airport concourses could salute and clap and wave. And according to my good friend, they did not look like they were enjoying this experience at all. They're on parade.
Well, that's what the Bush crime family has done. And it filters down. You know, corruption comes from the top. The only way to stop a poisonous snake is to cut off its head. But corruption comes from the top. We have three retired flag officers and the Secretary of Defense retired sitting at a hearing yesterday saying they had no knowledge of anything about anything where it concerned the lies and deception and murder regarding Pat Tillman. And it filters all the way down. It starts with these animals in the White House, down through the ranks, the civilians into the military. It's cover your ass, deny everything, forget everything, don't see everything. But when there's a photo op available, if a bridge collapses or you're moving your troops through a civilian airport, put on a show, folks. Put on a show. That's all the American public cares about. They don't give a damn. Put on a show. Stand near the collapsed bridge and say we're praying for you. Run your troops through Atlanta Hartsfield Airport. March them smartly and watch the proles line up and applaud. And why do we do that? Well, very simply, you know, those are our boys. They're going off to fight for freedom. Of course we're going to applaud them. What are we going to do? That's our president standing there near the most recent U.S. infrastructure tragedy. And by God, he's there to help. And he's going to help those people. He's going to scoop them up and press their heads to his breast. And he's going to get on Air Force One and whip out the congressional executive branch checkbook and write nice big checks to take care of all these infrastructure problems and on and on and on. Right? That's what the soldiers do. That's what the president does. That's what the military commanders do. Right? Huh? And the soldiers who are being used as props and disposable resources by this filthy administration, what are the soldiers going to do? Sarge, I don't want to march around the airport. Get in line, boy, and shut up. But Sarge, get in line. Jesus God. I don't know how y'all stand it. Let's do some phone calls, as promised here. Chuck is calling from Chuck's calling from Tennessee. Chuck, welcome to the program. Chuck's listening on Sirius Satellite Radio.
Hey, how's it going, Mike?
It's going fine.
You wound me up, buddy. I'm here to tell you. The acrimony I have for these people just cannot be stated.
Yeah, I hear you.
I mean, these people make me want to puke every day. It's gotten so disgusting.
And it never stops. Every day it's something new.
No, and it's just getting worse and worse and worse. And, you know, my feelings are so mixed because I have to thank Mr. quote-unquote president because he's taught me a lot about my government, good and bad.
Hey, hold on a sec. Hey, Chuck, can you hold on?
Sure.
All right, let me put you on hold. I got to do this break, and we'll come back. And pick it up when we come back about Bush. You got to thank him. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio Network.
Now I've been crying lately, thinking about the world as it is. Why must we go on hating? Why can't we live and live? Come out on the edge of darkness.
We're on a scavenger hunt for terror.
You wild little bastard. Can you believe that? The scavenger hunt. Scavenger hunt for terror, huh? Where'd Chuck go? Chuck, damn it! You weren't supposed to hang up. I wanted to hear what you got to say. Chuck in Tennessee? Well, try to call back in. Before I go back to the calls here, we got Chuck back. All right, we'll pick Chuck up in just... Well, let's get Chuck right now. Chuck in Tennessee. There you are. Thought we lost you.
Hey, Mike.
Hey.
Yeah, I thought I did too.
All right, well, you're back now. Where were we? You said that Bush has taught you a lot.
Yeah, he's taught me every little loophole and nook and cranny in the Constitution that anyone could possibly take advantage of.
And some that he created himself.
Yes, he's also taught me just how treasonous a president can get away, what kind of treasonous act someone can get away with.
And that's
before somebody in the Congress will do something, and they haven't done a thing yet.
And that,
so I just want him to know, and I want Nancy Pelosi, and I want Harry Reid to all know that I consider every one of them traitors.
I hear you.
And I also want to tell him something else. I want to tell George Bush that when he finally decides to get up enough nerve to try to take over this country, that he may get away with it for a little while. But this is a nation of 300 million people. And some of us are educated and know our history, and some of us don't. But I guarantee you that when everybody catches on, and everybody knows what's going on, and everybody's on the same page, and eventually it will happen, there will be a price to pay, and there will be a lot of bloodshed.
Well, I get the, I come to the same conclusion, Chuck. I don't think people in this country, that's one of the reasons that people come to this country, whether it was 300 years ago or 200 years ago or last month, is because for the most part, those of us who came here of our own volition, we don't like tyranny. We some of us don't mind imposing it on other people, but we don't like tyranny, especially here at home. And truth be told, if we knew of the tyranny that is imposed on other people around the planet by our policies, we probably wouldn't like that either. But fascism has not taken hold in this country yet. It's close, but it's always been because the American people, the leaders, knew that the American people at some point would take up arms, as Jefferson ordered us to, and stop it. And I don't know, this crew may think that we are too anesthetized to do anything, but I think you're right. I think if the time comes, there is a tipping point. I sometimes wonder where in the hell it is, but when they make that final ultimate power grab, no, I do not believe the American people are just going to sit back on our collective asses and let it happen. I don't. Chuck, thanks for checking in, pal. I appreciate what you had to say. Take care. This email from regarding the Tillman murder case that we were talking about the other night, I got this email from Neil, came today. Hi, Mike. I was listening to the Young Turks this morning with guest host Wes Clark Jr., son of General Wes Clark, and he made a very interesting observation on the Pat Tillman thing. Imagine you're one of the commanders in the Pentagon and you get a telegram stating that Corporal Pat Tillman is about to meet with anti-war writer Noam Chomsky next week. Do you issue an order to the troops in his platoon to murder him? Clark's point was that if Tillman was murdered, it wasn't likely to have been ordered. It could have been somebody in his platoon who hated him. Also, the thing about the three bullet holes being close together, I think that just means it was probably at close range. It still could have been an accident, right? It was a rapid-fire machine gun. I realize the government lied about it, but I think they probably did that just to cover up an accident and to make Tillman into a hero to drum up support for the war, the way they did with Jessica Lynch. I think that making extraordinary claims about strong evidence makes us look crazy, and it gives the right-wingers an excuse to make fun of us and discredit everything we say. Neil in Portland. Well, a couple of things. No, I don't believe, Neil, and I don't think anyone suggested or has suggested that an order came down from the Pentagon to murder Pat Tillman because he had stopped being the hoped-for poster boy for these monsters in the Defense Department regarding their toy war. No, I don't think anyone ordered that, but you don't have to issue an order through chain of command. You know that is, come on. I mean, it's one thing to question. It's something else to be naive. That's not the way things work anymore. Oh, sure, there's a paper trail for most things. If it's to surround Anbar province or to invade Fallujah, yeah, there are strategy sessions and orders and memos and messages and so on and so forth. But if word gets out that somebody, a very special somebody, who was supposed to be the a focal point of wonderful propaganda about fighting these dirty, rotten, filthy terrorists, if that person, all of a sudden, it becomes clear that person is about to jump ship, so to speak, and go back home and say, this is all bat squeeze. This is all a lie. It's very easy to arrange an accident. You don't go through the chain of command. How many private contractors are there in our various and sundry war zones now? Nobody knows. How many Dyne Corps people? How many Blackwater people? How many people who would just love to take out a Pat Tillman? You don't go through the chain of command. Come on, Neil. Your second point about the bullet holes being close together, Neil writes, I think that just means probably at close range. Well, we discussed this the other night. An M16 at close range, first of all, the head is going to move. I hate to put it that way. Unless the person's already dead, unless the person head is in a restraint. We went through that the other night. And as far as making extraordinary claims without strong evidence, making us look crazy, I don't think there are any, I don't know what extraordinary claims you're referring to. Are you referring to the events of 9/11? I don't think it's extraordinary to claim that the Bush crime family either let that happen or made it happen. I don't think that's extraordinary at all. These sons of bitches lied us into a war, Neil. Hello, Neil. Extraordinary claims without strong evidence? One word, WMD. Come on, Neil. I mean, I love the Young Turks. I think the world of Cenk. And I haven't heard Wes Clark, but I sure like his dad. But let's not get too far into the idea that if we voice opposition, we're making extraordinary claims that make us look crazy. I haven't heard an extraordinary claim on this program. I really haven't. Going all the way back to the murder of John Kennedy, I haven't heard any extraordinary claims. As far as the murder of Pat Tillman, if it wasn't murder, what was it? An accident? Accidents like that don't happen. My God. They don't happen. How many ballistics experts or military weapons specialists do you have to hear from, Neil, who say the official story is nonsense? It couldn't have happened that way. How many of those do you have to hear from before you go, oh, okay, and drop the extraordinary claim tag? I'm not, you know, getting in your case, pal. I mean, you're not here to defend yourself. I don't even know if you're listening. Not that you need to defend yourself. I'm just saying. I don't hear extraordinary claims on this program at all. This is not Art Bell program. Okay? Okay. Back to your phone calls. Gene is calling from Santa Rosa, California. Gene is listening on the Quake. Hey, Gene, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Fine, thanks. What you were just saying about the Pat Tillman thing, I think if we upped our language a little, they might get a little more scared, you know. It sounds like people just want to talk about it like it's murder or fragging, mm-hmm. which means it's amongst the soldiers. But if we start saying, well, what about, we want to look at if it's an assassination. And maybe they'll back down and then if they, all they did was be opportunistic and decide that they wanted to take advantage of it for public relations purposes to sell their war, maybe they'd finally admit that part at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think we have to up our language in all kinds of areas.
I do too. I hate walking around hearing most of my fellow citizens saying bah bah.
Yeah.
Obviously you're not, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, that's why, you know, I like to call because, like, that's what I want to talk about tonight. You're asking all the time. You really make me think. Why the anti-war and pro-democracy pushback has not been enough so far. And I think it's that as a group, Americans still desperately need to a massive consciousness raising.
Hey, Gene, hold on. I want you to talk about that a little bit more, but I've got to take a break here. So don't go away. Just stay right there. Massive consciousness raising. Stay with us, Gene. You stay with us, too, Truth Seeker. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we.
It's 10 before the hour. Back to Gene in Santa Rosa, California, listening on the Quake. Hey, Gene.
Hi.
Okay, where were we?
Yeah, well, you really stimulate my thinking when you ask questions like why the anti-war and pro-democracy pushback has not been enough from Americans. And. I think it's today the right is openly radicalized, and so much so like it's regressed all the way back to the lawless Stone Age. But the left is not as left as it was in the 60s.
That's true.
When the American population, they were digesting the consciousness raising of the Beat Poets with the work like Howell that you were telling us about last year.
Right.
And today Americans are... They seem to be just rediscovering the existence of the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like we still don't know how to demand to use its safeguards. And today there is no radical left to push back on the radical right. It's just not there. And at every turn, I hear us using Bush and Roe vocabulary rather than using the clear, even if it's radical, terms and words that describe reality.
Mm-hmm.
Can I give you an example? I see the Iraq surge, and we use that word surge, everybody still uses it, as not a military tactic to stabilize Iraq the way they want us to think it is,
right. But
it's rather an imperialistic method to speed up the complete destabilization of Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And it's working because it looks like the intellectuals and the secular-minded population of Iraq, they're all being decimated and dispersed as refugees,
mm-hmm.
and that means their ability to rebuild is being ruined. And even I see the Iraq Study Group as nothing but a panel that just was judging whether the destabilization had been adequate yet. And I don't think any of their sensible recommendations, I don't think any of them were ever meant to be implemented. It was just, those were just like cover. Americans just seem so green, like they don't want to pull back the veil and look at the ugliness.
That's
ugliness and talk about it with words.
That's very true. That's always, well, not always, to greater or lesser degrees, it's been one of the characteristics, I think, of Americans. We don't want to know the ugly stuff that's being done in our names. That veil was pulled back a couple of times. I think it was pulled back at the turn of the 19th century when America first became an imperial power during the Spanish-American War. I think people like General Smedley Butler helped pull that veil back. I think it was pulled back in the 30s. I think it was pulled back in the 60s. And you're right. Who's pulling it back now? No one wants to know. I can remember being on the air in the 80s when the slaughter in Central America was going on, being conducted by people who are even now conducting U.S. foreign policy, whether it is a convicted felon like Elliot Abrams or a sneak like Negroponte or the killers that are in the Bush administration. This Bush administration are the same killers that were in the Reagan Bush administration.
And their model is old. You know, I always look back at the the way the corporate imperialistic destabilization of China was conducted in the 1800s and the 1900s, all the way including the Opium Wars.
Well, you're more of a scholar on that than I am.
It's a really easy one because it was the tea companies and stuff. They trade tea for opium. They completely destabilized the Chinese culture.
Well, one way to destabilize a culture is through a drug trade. Look at the United States.
And that's what they're doing here.
Look at Afghanistan.
Sure. We have to use the words exploitation and destabilization when we refer to our own country. They destabilized California with the energy scam.
Right.
And this whole thing with the infrastructure, letting it collapse destabilizes us.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you make great points, Jean. I appreciate you checking. Wait, where's Jean? There she is. Go ahead, Jean, I'm sorry. Jean? Oh, well. We got to the button too quick, Jean, my bad. Quick email here from Chad in Minneapolis. Mike, just wanted to say that today as my office was buzzing about the bridge collapse, I couldn't help myself from responding to almost anyone who raised the subject, bet you'll pay your taxes now. I think it speaks volumes that the new Twins Stadium had its groundbreaking ceremony postponed as a result of the bridge incident. Nearly $1 billion will be spent for its construction. The celebration was ready, the ice sculptures were carved, and the whole shebang. I ask you, Mike, what will kill more people in this country, terror or the failing infrastructure being a product of corrupt representatives and corporate trickery that have so reduced the vitality of the commons? Mark my words, if we continue on this path of privatization, we will continue to see many Katrinas all over the country. Steam pipe in New York, bridge in Minnesota, what's next? Atlas is shrugging. Chad, Minneapolis. Thanks, Chad. Good point. Well, all of you make good points. And when we come back after the break, I want to share with you a piece written in the Star Tribune, the Minneapolis Star Tribune, on the events of the past 24 hours. It just bears some extra circulation here. Not that the Star Tribune needs any help from me or the writer, Nick Coleman, but I think it's an excellent piece, and I'm going to share it with you when we come back after the break. Stick around. We have another hour to go before we sleep, okay? I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Welcome back, about 7 past the hour. Back to your phone calls here in just a moment. But I want to share with you this this column by Nick Coleman, writing in the Star Tribune. This is what he writes. The cloud of dust above the Mississippi that rose after the Interstate 35 West bridge collapse Wednesday evening has dissipated. But there are other dark clouds still hanging over Minneapolis and Minnesota. The fear of falling is a primal one, along with the fear of being trapped or of drowning. Minneapolis suffered a perfect storm of nightmares Wednesday evening, as anyone who couldn't sleep last night can tell you, including the parents who clench their jaws and tighten their hands on the wheel every time they drive a carload of strapped-in kids across a steep chasm or a rushing river. Don't panic, you tell yourself. The people in charge of this know what they're doing. They make sure that the bridges stay standing. And if there were a problem, they would tell us, wouldn't they? What if they didn't? The Death Bridge was, quote, structurally deficient, end quote, we now learn, and had a rating of just 50%, the threshold for replacement. But no one appears to have erred on the side of public safety. The errors were all the other way. Would you drive your kids or let your spouse drive over a bridge that had a sign saying, caution, 50% bridge ahead? No, you wouldn't. But there wasn't any warning on the half-chance bridge. There was nothing that told you that you might be sitting in your overheated car, bumper to bumper, on a hot summer day, thinking of dinner with your wife, or of going to see the Twins game, or of taking your kids for a walk to Dairy Queen later, when, in a rumble and a roar, the world you knew would pancake into the river. There isn't any bigger metaphor for society in trouble than a bridge falling, its concrete lanes pointing brokenly at the sky, its crumpled cars pointing down at the deep waters where people disappeared. Only, this isn't a metaphor. The focus at the moment is on the lives lost and injured in the heroic efforts of rescuers and first responders, good Samaritans, and uniformed public servants. Minnesotans can be proud of themselves and of the emergency workers who answered the call, but when you have a tragedy on this scale, it isn't just concrete and steel that has failed us. So far, we are told that it wasn't terrorists or tornadoes that brought this bridge down, but those assurances are not reassuring. They are troubling. If it wasn't an act of God or the hand of fate, and it proves not to be just a lousy accident, a girder mistakenly cut, or a train that hit a support, then we are left to conclude that it was worse than any of those things because it was more mundane and more insidious. This death and destruction was the result of incompetence or indifference. In a word, it was avoidable. That means it never should have happened. And that means that public anger will follow our sorrow as sure as night descended on the missing. For half a dozen years, the motto of state government, and particularly that of Governor Tim Pawlenty, has been, no new taxes. It's been popular with a lot of voters, and it has mostly prevailed. So much so that Pawlenty vetoed a 5-cent gas tax increase, the first in 20 years, last spring, and millions were lost that might have gone to road repair. And yes, it could have fallen, even if the gas tax had gone through, because we are years behind a dangerous curve when it comes to the replacement of infrastructure that everyone but wingnuts in coonskin caps agree is one of the basic duties of government. I'm not just pointing fingers at Pawlenty. The outrage here is not partisan. It is general. Both political parties have tried to govern on the cheap, and both have dithered and dallied and spent public wealth on stadiums while scrimping on the basics. How ironic it is that tonight's scheduled groundbreaking for a new Twins ballpark has been postponed. Even the stadium barkers realize it is in poor taste to celebrate the spending of $500 million on ballparks when your bridges are falling down. Perhaps this is a sign of shame. If so, it is welcome. Shame is overdue. At the federal level, the parsimony is worse, and so is the negligence. $1 trillion spent in Iraq while schools crumble. There aren't enough cops on the street, and bridges decay while our leaders cross their fingers and ignore the rising chances of disaster. And now, one has fallen to our great sorrow, and people died losing a gamble they didn't even know they had taken. They believed someone was guarding the bridge. We need a new slogan, and we need it yesterday. No more collapses. It's Nick Coleman writing for the Minneapolis Star Tribune. All right, back to your phone calls. Bruce is calling from New Jersey, listening on the internet. Bruce, welcome to the program.
Hi, how you doing, Mike?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
You know, it's the new hour here. Can I still throw in my 2 cents regarding Tillman?
Sure, you can. Go ahead.
Great. When the Tillman Memorial took place, every news station had some kind of footage, and they were all doing there. They were scrambling to interview anybody
yes.
who knew him, high school coaches, friends, whatever. CNN, it was either on Wolf Blitzer or it was Larry King. They interviewed a guy that was in his convoy, the last guy to see him alive, the guy that was standing right next to him. He gives his whole firsthand account. They had the graphics and everything depicting the scene. But just real quick, just listen to this. So they said it was a large convoy taking off from point A to point B. They've traveled the road a bunch of times. They're driving to this bend in the road where there's this hillside, it's a rocky hillside. And they always go to the left-hand side of this hillside. There's no roads. It's just,
right.
you know, cleared area. So they go to the left-hand side all the time. The lead car decides he's going to go to the right. He's radioing back. All the cars are radioing back and forth, and he's telling the convoy they're going to the right. They get somebody else, one of the other commander guys, gets into an argument with him of, you know, what are you talking about? We can't go to the right. We always go to the left. He said something to the effect of, well, we have new overhead satellite footage that said, you know, there's a shorter cut there, blah, blah, blah. Well, it turns into an argument that stops the convoy. They stop the convoy. They get out, and one guy says, well, look, we don't have enough some of these vehicles don't have enough fuel to take a chance on your little shortcut. So they divvied up the convoy into two. You know, a lot of this is already, you know, suspect. But, okay, so they divvy the convoy up to two. Tillman goes in the convoy that's on the most traveled road, and then the other half of the convoy takes off onto the shortcut to the right. This is all firsthand account from this soldier.
Right.
So the convoy going to the right looking for the shortcut only gets less than a mile before the terrain is so rough that they can't go any further, and they have to double back. They double back. They don't radio the first convoy to tell them that it was a dead end and they're doubling back. They just double back.
Right.
So Tillman in his convoy, now he's not even the lead on the convoy. He's just a guy in a car. So the convoy's driving down the road and somebody with binoculars peering over to the right-hand side sees vehicles coming towards them on the other side of the hill. They give the command to pull the vehicles over, and everyone gets out of their vehicles, takes their weapons, and they run up into the mountains or the hillside, and they all take positions behind boulders and rocks. And as this is twilight, so their night vision goggles don't work, and it's a murky night, so they don't know. And then finally someone said, well, they gave the command, fire. So they started firing at the convoy. Well, the convoy supposedly sees gunfire coming from the hillside, and they think it's insurgents. So they pull, you know, they stop their convoy, and they get out of their vehicles, and they all start firing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, someone in the hill, one of Tillman's men, they figure out it's their guys.
Right.
However he did it, he figures out it's their guys. He starts yelling to cease fire. Now, this is what the one guy said. He said, when they got out of their vehicles, Tillman took the lead. He ran first up the hillside. He ran to the tallest position. And then everyone to him, like he said, Tillman was about 5 feet to his left and maybe 5 feet up. And they all went like diagonally down. So he said Tillman was above him. And then, you know, to his right, there was a guy below him and so on and so forth down this angled hillside.
Mm-hmm.
So he said they were firing and firing. Then all of a sudden, one of his guys notices it's their own guys. They call the ceasefire. They start radioing to try to tell the guys in the convoy, hey, stop firing. It's us in the hills. We're not insurgents. They don't, you know, it's not unusual that the guys just drop their radios and they're shooting like crazy, so they didn't respond. They went to their second means of communication, which is hand signals. Somebody was trying to, I don't know if they waved their guns in the air, I don't know what they do, but they're doing some kind of hand signals. But once again, it's twilight, so the night vision goggles don't work. And finally, the third option was every day they get different colored smoke bombs. So they whip out like a hand grenade smoke bomb thing, and they throw it out, and this purple smoke comes out, and then the convoy on the ground realizes it's them, and they stop shooting. Now, the guy who's on Larry King said, at this time, he yells up to Tillman. Tillman doesn't respond. He yells again. Tillman doesn't respond, but he sees a river of blood coming down the rocks, so much blood, he knew nobody could have survived it. And he said when the ceasefire was granted and everything was okay, he got up from his position, looked over, and Tillman was shot in the head and died. Now we know that's all a lie. We know none of that is true because the convoy, he also said, was like 100 to 200 yards away that was shooting at them in their position in the mountains. That's all a lie. Where's that guy? I mean, that's public footage. He said that publicly on CNN. You know, that's the part that's maddening is, those of us, unlike Gonzalez and Rumsfeld, that have a memory that lasts a little longer than 24 hours. Well, what are we supposed to think about all this? You know, and you get into arguments with people, and they go, what do you think happened? Come on.
Well, I'm glad you shared that with us, Bruce, because I'd not seen that, and you're absolutely right. Where is the comeback? Where's the follow up that says, oh, listen, all that stuff that we put out the other night on Larry King was not true. That's the point, Bruce. I got to leave it there. Thanks
sure.
a lot, pal.
Take care. Bye bye.
All right, appreciate you checking in. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Hey, Truth Seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, more of Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. We ran a little bit over in that last segment, so this is going to be a quickie here. Nick is calling from Minneapolis, listening via the internet. Nick, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. This is Nick, your Polka Bureau Chief.
Oh, hey, Nick. How are you doing?
Doing well. Hey, the thing I want to talk about, and it's about the Minneapolis bridge thing.
Yeah.
The Dems, all of the Congress, the Senate, they're going to be taking this month-long August vacation thing. And the thing that has to happen is that the Dems have got to get the message. They've got to get the message about the infrastructure, that this is a problem that has, this has been an ongoing creeping problem, and this is just the very beginning. If the nation continues to ignore it, this is just going to get worse.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be, a bridge somewhere else next week.
Sure.
Or it's just going to be an ongoing thing. And we got to get the message to the Democrats, because the Republicans have their answer, and that's privatization. And that's just a travesty. That's out and out theft from the American people.
Yeah, and it doesn't work.
This
idea that private enterprise always does a better job than government is a damn lie. It's a lie of the most outrageous sort. It's insane, and that's another one of those perverted, sick ideas that somehow has been sold to a huge chunk of the American public that votes as being truth, and it is not. The greatest developments in this country have never come from private enterprise. It always comes from some sort of government program, whether it's medical research at a university, or roads, or bridges, or a military, or universities. I don't care what it is. It comes from a collective idea that we could do it better, and it's done by government. Now, I'm not talking about Republicans. Republicans couldn't find their asses with both hands. But,
and a flashlight.
But the idea that somehow private enterprise is better than public funding or public initiative is nonsense. But it's been sold to a huge chunk of Americans. It really pisses me off.
Yeah, and this will be their message. This will be the Republicans' talking point.
Sure.
Well, the reason why this happened is that we didn't have it privatized and the government can't control it. Well, no, the reason why it hasn't been controlled is that the Republicans have had control for too damn long, and it's been their neglect through these tax cuts, through this happy-minded hogwash that they've been spouting since Goldwater and, you know, since Reagan was their spokesmodel for it.
Well, that's been, Nick, thanks. I got to leave there. I appreciate you checking in, pal. That's been the whole idea, I know, certainly going back to the Reagan years, defund everything, let it rot, and then convince the Americans that it's because it was publicly funded to begin with, and here comes private enterprise. What a dirty, filthy lie.
And now, a soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
26 before the hour. And by the way, in the national tragedy of this event in Minneapolis, I get this email today. Bush has signed another executive order further destroying the Fifth Amendment. He did this, I think it was just last week. If you, what was the issue then, Kathy? Do you remember? If you speak out or provide material support to, what the hell was it? Just drawing a complete blank. Yeah, it was critical of the war effort, but it had to do with a specific country. Was it, Well, now he's issued one of these fatwas where it concerns the sovereignty of Lebanon. And he reserves for himself the right to seize property and destroy your life if you blah, 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 blah. Any person determined by the Secretary of the Treasury in consultation with the Secretary of State to have done all sorts of things, including any action that might undermine Lebanon's democratic processes or institutions, any action that might support the reassertion of Syrian control or otherwise contributing to Syrian influence in Lebanon, any person who has materially assisted, sponsored, or provided financial, material, or technical support, blah, 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 with or without their knowledge, if you're a spouse or a dependent child of any person who's done this, now we've got guilt by association, collective guilt. This was just passed yesterday. Is today the 2nd? This is August 2nd, right? This was just signed as an executive order by Bush yesterday. It's just what is going on here every single day. Bush. And not Bush, he's such a dumbass, but the people running him that say, sign this, George, are drawing the rope tighter and tighter and tighter. I sometimes think it really is going to happen in this country. I read in the Times today about this increase in Americans moving to Canada. It's way up. It still doesn't equal the number of Canadians that come to this country for citizenship. For some god-awful reason, 22,000 Canadians a year come to this country for permanent residency or citizenship. And the reverse flow now, even though it's stepped up considerably, the flow of Americans is only going north, as opposed to Canadians going south, is only about 25% of Canadians coming to this country. Why in the hell would you Canadians want to come here? Well, I got, you know, I forget that there are Canadian neo-fascists, just as there are... Kathy, you turn the mic off a second. I have to blow my nose. Thank you. That takes two hands, so I can't hold the dump button. I'm sorry. That was a rather tacky thing for me to say on national radio, wasn't it? How else to explain the silence, though? Let's go back to your phone calls before I lose everyone here tonight. Tony is calling from Phoenix and listening on KPHX. Hey, Tony.
Hi, Mike. Glad to hear you're feeling better. I really am.
Yeah, I'm feeling wonderful.
Mike, I'm kind of encouraged by some statistics that come out in Phoenix today.
Okay.
And one of them is that voter registration in Arizona is up 40%, which is the highest 20 years. And out of that 40%, 52% registered independent, 36% registered as Democrats, and only 11% registered as Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
This is becoming a blue state, and it will become a blue state. And programs like this are really, really helping. And I know people I'm turning on to Air America every day, and I'm saying, you got to listen because the truth is here. The truth is here. And people are listening, and I think that the Republicans are in for a rude, rude awakening, and especially John McCain. He's done. He's toast. And, you know, we're really happy with our dog catcher here, so I don't think that he'll have much more to do here. So his work is done.
I hope McCain just retires someplace and draws his Navy pension and just shuts up.
Well, you know, Iraq really does need a dog catcher, and maybe he could get something going on there.
Well, that's true. That's true, too.
But, Mike, it's really good to have you back on the air, and thanks for taking my call tonight.
Thank you, Tony. I appreciate you checking in. I hope to hear from you again. Let me just make one correction, though, one minor correction. Tony, this is a misperception that so many people have. KPHX is not an Air America station. It is a Nova M network station. Nova M is a new network, relatively speaking. It's only been around for about 10 months. Air America is a train wreck heading for a cliff. Now, the reason people get confused is because KPHX carries quite a bit of programming that originates with either with Air America or is the same programming that's carried by Air America. Stephanie Miller, for example, is not an Air America employee. She produces her own program. It's distributed by a different network. The only program on KPHX that is still completely, totally an Air America program is Randy's program. That's it. Now, I should know, but I'm in Atlanta. I should know the total lineup of what appears on KPHX. But I can tell you now that the only program that appears on, unless I'm grossly mistaken here, and I think Ian, our associate producer, would holler something in my ears if I were wrong. Now, there might be some weekend shows, although I think the weekend shows are all local. But KPHX is not an Air America station. It is run by Nova M. Now, it gets very confusing because Nova M was put together and is owned by, more or less, the people who started Air America, and that is Shelley and Anita Drobny. It's a convoluted story. One of the only reasons there is an abundance all of a sudden of progressive or, let me put it this way, not conservative, because so much of what's done at Air America now is no more liberal than what you hear on Fox News Channel. But practically single-handedly, well, there's two of them, really, so I guess it'd be double-handedly, the Drobnys are the ones who 5 years ago drew a line in the sand and said, okay, by God, we're going to get some consolidated liberal or progressive talk out there. And they did. And they were rewarded for it by being pushed out of their own company. And that happens in corporate America. You know what I'm talking about. And Air America was a corporation and still is. But they were pushed out by thugs who then bankrupted the company. Duh. So now it's been taken over by the Green Brothers in New York, and it is heading for a brick wall. I don't think that, just read the Wall Street, read the New York Times, read the business reports, read talkingradio.com online and get the truth of this stuff. But what you hear on KPHX is not, you may hear an Air America program, Randy's, God bless her. She's the only one left on that network that truly talks a liberal progressive line. She's the only one. I don't know how she continues to put up with it. Put up with being on that network. I don't. I have no idea. But anyway, just for clarification, KPHX in Phoenix is the flagship station for the Nova M radio network. Okay? Okay. It's just a technical little stupid thing, but needs to be said. You know, you don't want to consider the New York Yankees to be... Oh, never mind. Don't get lost in a sports metaphor, Malloy. You're no good at that. All right, back to your phone calls. Kevin is calling from Minneapolis and is also listening via the Internet. Kevin, welcome to the program. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm okay. I just want to ask, you know, how many more people have to die before people realize that trickle-down conservative economics do not work?
I wish I had an answer.
And, you know, it's like they almost don't want to believe, you know, privatization, trickle down, let the free market decide. You know, there was an act of terror that happened in Minnesota, and it's called the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. That was the terrorist group behind what happened in Minnesota. You know, too many years of small government, you know, we governed down to nothing. You know, businesses don't care about bridges. They care about using them.
Yeah.
But they don't care about maintaining them because that costs money.
Yeah, unless they can charge a toll.
Yeah, which they pocket, like what Goldman Sachs is doing.
Yeah, I hear you.
You know, it's just, it really has to end. And, you know, and the thing is, that bridge was used by primarily conservative suburban Republicans to get in and out the city. That's the greatest irony of the whole thing.
Yeah. I hear you. All right, listen, I got a break. Thanks a lot for checking in, Kevin. Take care, okay?
Bye.
We'll talk again. Thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered the program, handled your calls, and co-produced the program tonight from our flagship station, KPHX in Phoenix. That is the Nova M flagship station. By the way, Tom Hartman, who is also carried by Nova M in some markets, is also... there again, it gets kind of weird. Hartman is connected to Air America, but he's also self-syndicated. I'm getting a headache from talking about this stuff. Thanks to Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent, Billy Foster, the moderator of the NovaMRadio.com chat room, and Catherine Bay, our executive producer. And just a program that might be a little bit early for this. We were due to be on vacation all next week, but because I was out a couple of days this week with pneumonia, I'm going to stick around Monday and Tuesday and take off on Wednesday. And Peter Werby will guest host the rest of the week next week. So that's kind of the schedule. Does anybody care about that? I don't know. Do people care about that, Kathy? Really?
Werby's fans are legion.
Well, I don't mean Werby, of course. I mean about, I'm not going to be here tomorrow, but I will be there next week. But on the third Tuesday of the following month,
You know, I hear some hosts devote almost entire segments to where they're flying to, where they'll be speaking, they're doing. Right. I'm going to be in San Francisco next week. And it's like, I don't care.
I know. Back to your phone calls. Joe is calling from Brookings, Oregon, listening on KGOE. Hey, Joe.
Yeah. Well, today happens to be the 17th anniversary of Iraq invading Kuwait. We're still dealing with this crap in Iraq. 17 years later, we're still dealing with it.
Oh, my God. That blew right by me. Are you talking about today, Thursday, or today, Friday?
No, today, Thursday.
Today,
yes,
Thursday.
August the 2nd.
This is, boy.
The exact same day, too.
I'll be
17th
damned.
Anniversary.
I'll be damned.
And, And that's why, infrastructure is falling apart. And Minneapolis.
Yeah, think of the money. Think of the money, the resources, the energy, the time, the manpower, the womanpower that's been spent on murdering Iraqis and trying to steal their oil that could have been spent. Oh, never mind.
Well, you know, and the thing is, people talk about Iraq like we've been occupying them for, what, four and a half years?
Yeah.
No, we've been occupying Iraq for over 16 and a half years.
We certainly have been killing them and shooting them and strafing them and bombing them and screwing up their infrastructure and trying to steal their assets. Well, an example of I don't know what to call it, piracy, banditry, theft, fraud, deceit, thievery.
Acting like true bastards.
Oh,
you know
my
what
God.
We owe the people of Iraq? You know, I always hear these snots get up on TV, we owe it to Iraq to help them rebuild their country and so on and so forth. Hey, we don't care about Iraq. What we owe to the people in Iraq is to get the hell out. Because we were never going to do nothing to help them out anyway. That's what we owe them. And that's what we owe to ourselves. Hello?
Yeah, no, I'm here, Joe.
Okay. Yeah, it's to get the hell out of Iraq. Now, I did want to go on to impeachment. The cowards in Congress, history is not going to look kindly on them if Bush winds up invading Iran or Syria or, say, Venezuela or Cuba. And, you know, what if he goes on after that, uses that as an excuse to declare martial law? These congressmen know what is going on, but they don't have the guts. They're too cowardly to go after impeachment. God bless Cindy Sheehan. I hope she kicks a Nancy Pelosi's butt up one side and down the other. And I got two slogans. Impeachment equals peace, and peace equals impeachment. If you are for peace, you are for impeachment.
Well,
plain and simple.
That's the truth. Thanks, Joe. Joe hangs up very quickly. Always has. James is calling from Tacoma, listening on KTPK. Hey, James, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, I'm glad to hear you're feeling better and you're sounding a lot better out here.
Oh, great. Hey, well, thank you.
Our infrastructure is really, really bad. You were mentioning it earlier when I first tuned in tonight. And a day before yesterday at the Hanford Nuclear Reservation in Washington, they reported the largest spill ever. And they said something about a 55-gallon drum-sized spill, and I'm going, that's the largest?
I was just going to say, James, I haven't heard a word about this.
I haven't seen it in the news. It was on KTPK, and that's the only station I tune to.
Mm-hmm.
And I tend to chase knowledge instead of ignorance.
I hear that.
And I listen to KTPK out of Seattle. And
so it was on KTPK's newscast?
Yes, it was.
Mm-hmm.
And they said it was about a 55-gallon drum, and I think that they were playing it down because the leukemia that is through Spokane and up through northern Idaho and the cancers that have arose over the decades now
mm-hmm.
has finally been admitted to by the federal government that, yes, they did have a spill. Well, if they had another spill, what are they going to do about that now other than not put it in the news and not let anybody know again?
Mm-hmm.
Our media we don't have a media.
In so many instances, that's absolutely true, and it's getting worse and worse. I'm going to have to do some checking because I want to I want to find out about that, James. I know the problems at Hanford. That's one of the oldest nuclear facilities in the country, if I'm not mistaken.
It is.
And it should have been taken down a long time ago. But this is the horror of nuclear power generation. Once you start, you're on the back of the tiger or the dragon. There's no way to stop. What are you going to do with all the waste?
And they don't put it in the media. The people would help. You give us a problem, and we're going to try to help to fix it.
Yeah,
and we've been pumping taxes and pumping taxes and pumping taxes towards these people. And if they don't let us know through media or don't let us know somehow how to help with the infrastructure, how to help with, Mike, schooling.
I know. It never stops. James, I have to leave it there, pal. Listen, thank you. I appreciate what you had to say. I'll check that story out just for my own edification. I'll see you all tomorrow night. Thanks for participating in the program tonight, however you did that, all right? Take care. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.